Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration. Collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
Well, welcome to Face to Face, and thanks for listening. My next guest is Tracy Deer, and she's here to talk about her new award-winning film, Beans. It's in theaters right now, soon to be on video on demand. It's winning awards and doing a crazy festival tour as well. And I was so thrilled that Tracy had the time to sit down and chat with me about the film and about so many other things. This film Beans is a part of Canadian history, but what's so interesting for me about this and many things are, but it has a universal, a universal story to tell. And Tracy talks about this idea of healing through storytelling. And so it's about the Oka crisis that occurred in Canada in the early 90s. And everything that went sideways about it. And that is the understatement of the year. And Tracy mixes archival footage and narrative storytelling in a way that is just so, it's so powerful. And this is a compelling, beautiful, compassionate film. I learned a ton. And had a great time chatting with Tracy about so many things. Tracy talked about taking our anger and turning it into something that's positive and proactive. She wants to change the world through storytelling, and I just so love that. We talked about, you know, bridges, reconciliation, and how they're so still under construction in Canada and in so many places around the world. We talked about transgenerational trauma. We talked about the coming of age and how this story Beans is quite autobiographical for Tracy, and I think the thing that I think excites me the most about this film is that it's really about not just sitting down and watching, but more importantly, it's about listening. And Tracy and I talk about that as well. And I'm not going to say much more, but you definitely do want to see the film. And I really hope you take the time to listen to the interview now. Again, what a thrill to have Tracy on Beans. It's in theaters. It's going to be on a video on demand soon. So make sure you check it out. David Peck Live. .com for more information about my writing and my speaking and also the podcasting shows up there now. I've brought all my websites under one umbrella, a lot easier to get a hold of me and to sign up for the newsletter. Please do that. And if you've been listening for a while, and even if you haven't, and you love this interview, please leave us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate that. And any kind of social mediation goes a long way. Sign up for us on YouTube. Give us a thumbs up there. That would be appreciated as well. But for the time being, don't touch the dial. Coming up, Tracy Deer talking about her beautiful and compelling new film, Beans. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by a very special guest here with us today. We have a filmmaker, a storyteller, director, producer. I mean, I'm not sure what else is on her CV, but Tracy Deer is here with us to talk about her new, very compelling and award-winning film, Beans. Tracy, thanks for joining us today on Face to Face.
Thanks for having me. Thrilled to be here.
So, hey, why don't you wave the flag for Beans a little bit before we step in? So it's coming soon to theaters near you, July 23rd across Canada. So many awards, a festival run in the U.S. Can you talk a little bit about where things are at for you with the film and for our listeners? And then let's step right into the story.
Sure. Well, you did a really good summary there. It's just been absolutely incredible. The film premiered last fall at TIFF. We were so sorry. Can I just take that answer again? Now you're going to have to do some editing.
Oh, no, that's okay. We could just start over. But we can. You know what? We'll edit it. I can do that. Yeah, go.
We could start over. I'm sorry. I'll be... No worries. I will be able to answer. It's like as soon as I take a pause and I can feel the seconds ticking away, I get nervous that I'm taking too long to answer. It throws me off.
Well, hey, but, just so you know, so you feel a bit maybe a bit more comfy. I like the long answers, and so do most of my listeners, as far as I can tell. Okay. So don't worry about that, and that's all good. So give me one sec, and I'll bring us back in.
Thank you.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest here with us today. We have Tracy Deer to talk about a whole lot of things, I think, but most importantly, to talk about her beautiful and compelling new film, Beans. Tracy, thanks for joining me today on Face to Face.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, real pleasure to have you on. And this is a part of Canadian history that I think has a story to tell to the world, really, about so many things. And I've seen it referenced as a coming of age story and an empathy bomb. And I can't wait to get into some of those things with you. You know, you're a director, you're a filmmaker, you're a writer, producer. I'm sure you've got a whole lot of other bullet points on your CV too. But I would love for you just to tell the audience, my listeners, about this run you've had with Beans. I mean, so many awards, a festival run in the U.S., released across Canada, July 23rd. Tell us a little bit about how crazy this has all been amazing way.
It has been amazing. And I'll tell you what else is amazing. Empathy bomb. That is the first time I've heard that phrase associated with my film, and I love it.
Oh, that's awesome.
I hope that that is the experience people get when they watch it. I think it's many things, but ultimately that is what I'm seeking to do is build bridges and build empathy. It's been absolutely incredible. So the film premiered last fall at TIFF, and it was received so generously by critics. We were honored with a number of awards at TIFF. We ended up playing at many festivals across the country. We won other awards at these festivals. We won Audience Choice Awards, which really make me so, so happy. I mean, the audience, those are the people I'm trying to reach. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the critics.
Yeah, of course.
I love the festivals. I love them. But really, you know, I want to change the world through storytelling. And so the way you do that is to get into the hearts and minds of everyday people who give you that hour and a half or that 2 hours to sit down and go on a journey with what you've created. So the Audience Choice Awards have been amazing, and they've really been rolling in. Just recently, we won Best Picture at the Canadian Screen Awards, which is an incredible honor. I also won Best First Feature Award there as well. We won a Crystal Bear at the Berlinale, which was just
Are you going to have a shelf big enough to keep all these awards on?
I might have to extend it a little bit. Yep. I mean, over the 20 years of my career so far, it's been wonderful to have been honored with awards for my other work. And it's actually my debt. So I have an office and in my home in the basement, and it's very bright and cheerful. I need all of that in order to create. But right in front of my desk is the ledge where the window is. And that's where all of these awards are lined up. And it's, you know, I can look up from my desk and I can look at them and just remember the journey for each film, each project. And you know, the recognition, it means a lot. It means a lot. And it helps me. It really does help me. When I was 12 years old, that's also when I lived through the Oka crisis, but I was 12 years old when I decided I wanted to be a filmmaker. And for the longest time, it really felt like an impossible dream. But I also come from a community where you don't tell us what to do, and we don't put up with no. I think that is one thing that I've really taken from my community. So even being told by society, by individuals, that my dream was impossible, it was stupid, it made me even more determined to accomplish it. And so when I do see these awards, it reminds me of everything that I've accomplished and everything I've worked for, and all those people, all those naysayers, that I've proven them wrong. Right. So I will make room. I will make room for these other awards. And it's just been absolutely incredible.
It really is remarkable for so many reasons, I would think, especially now you've got quite a history and working in media and so on. But first time narrative full length feature to just knock it out of the park, as they say, it's got to be a beautiful thing. You must be kind of I don't know if you experience goosebumps a lot, but you must be just kind of marveling in that. And I hear you when you say the critics are wonderful, but you want to change the world through storytelling. I mean, that to me is a remarkable thing. You know, you mentioned really quickly about this idea of building bridges. The bridge. Plays a pretty important role in the film. There's a couple of scenes on the bridge that are just heart-wrenching for me, for any viewer, I would imagine. And there's a moment where it just hit me and I said, what a beautiful metaphor to be on the bridge. We're all kind of on that bridge with Beans and her mom and with these families. Do you think that's kind of where we are right now? Like, are we still building the bridge? I mean, you know, it feels to me like we've got a long way to go towards relationship and reconciliation. So that's a huge question, I know, but I couldn't help ignoring it when you mentioned it as well, this idea of building bridges.
Yeah, I think that bridge is under construction. I think there are those who are really at the front lines, really pushing for that construction to happen. And then there are those who might be standing on the ground watching this bridge go up, and they haven't decided yet if they're going to cross the bridge, if they're going to help build that bridge. And really the film, those are the people I want the film to reach. And I want them to want to get on that bridge after watching the film.
How did you know at 12? How did you have that? I love that you talk so much about persistence and not taking no for an answer. I think that's incredible, because it seems to me, I mean, I'm coming up on 600 interviews over the past 9 or 10 years. And the one thing I can say about filmmakers, I can say many things. They're a committed, passionate, persistent lot, you know, that it's rolling up your sleeves, and especially for first-time filmmakers. But how, pray tell, did you know at 12 that this is where you wanted to go?
You know, I just got hit with this thunderbolt. It was the age of the portable VCR, and we couldn't afford it. It was too expensive. You know, the fancy new tech.
Yeah.
It was too expensive to own, but we had a video store in the community, and we were able to rent a VCR. So my father on the weekends would rent a VCR, and he would rent a pile of movies. And there was movies for me and my sister exclusively. There was movies that we could all watch as a family. And then there was movies that him and my mom would watch later in the evening. And I just loved it. I loved being able to go other places. I loved being able to go on these journeys with characters. I learned so much about myself, so much about who I want to be based on these stories that I watched. And it was also a really safe place for me to feel my feelings. So this was a wonderful experience for me, and I was so inspired by these stories that after every few movies, I would have another vision of what I wanted to be when I grew up. And this went on for a couple months where I would declare to my parents, like, no, this time this is what I want to be because this movie that I watched. And then it just hit me that if I made movies, I would be able to experience all these stories. I'd be able to put these stories out into the world and maybe inspire some little girl out there to follow her dream. And it just made so much sense. And it also sounded like the coolest possible job right. anyone could possibly have.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's when I knew. And I literally the next day started writing scripts. I started saving my allowance. It took about 6 months to rent the very big giant video camcorders at the time, from the video store.
Yeah.
They weighed almost as much as me. I could only hold them up for about 30 seconds at a time. So every shot could only be about 30 seconds. But yeah, that's when it started. And I've been looking through a viewfinder at the world ever since.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I love the passion. I love the commitment. You start the film out, I believe the credit sequence, help me out here. I think it's a newscast I'm listening to in the background. Yes. I love the way you introduce archival footage, and it's really I don't know if you'd call it a character, but it's such an important part and piece of the film that to sort of dance between documentary and narrative. And yet that was the news on at the time. Was that really a really conscious decision for you? I mean, I guess the question really is, how come you didn't make a documentary instead of a narrative film? Maybe that's the question that kind of might help to answer a few of those others that are connected.
Ooh, that's a good question. And that's a question I haven't gotten. Yes, no, it was very deliberate to do a fiction film about this time as opposed to a documentary. And I come from a history of documentary. My first 10 years were in documentary. I love documentary. But in order to tell a story from a child's point of view of that time, in a documentary, that would mean speaking to people my age to reflect on that time. And I wanted people to be with a child, experience the event through a child's eyes. And I didn't think that was possible to really get at it by adults reflecting back at what it was to be when they were a child.
So it's kind of like you wanted to sort of reach in, not appeal to them academically or intellectually, but maybe a bit of both, build a bridge between sort of the head and the heart. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. And the other thing is I realized when I was really embedded in documentary that I was only reaching a certain audience. You know, there's a certain type of person who will go see a documentary, who will seek out documentaries.
Right. That makes sense.
And I want to reach more people. And so that's when I started transitioning my career into fiction. And here I am now with my first feature.
Yeah, it's a remarkable thing. Do you ever have to sort of pinch yourself? To say
all the time,
how did I actually make it here?
All the time. And in fact, this last year has been really, really quite surreal. I'm going to get emotional. The premiere at TIFF in the fall, I was so nervous and I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure how the film would be received. If it was successful in saying everything I wanted to say. I think it's very natural. Anyone who creates anything is really vulnerable. Yeah. But this hits so close to home and speaks to my own coming of age, which was, as you can see in the film, very devastating. So I was nervous on so many levels, and then this ride began, and it's been just absolutely incredible. And you know, that little girl back then, she felt so invisible and so worthless after mm-hmm. what she experienced at the Oka crisis. And now 31 years later to be here with a platform, with a voice, with power, feeling mm-hmm. empowered. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah. I love it. With a platform and with a voice. I mean, there's a t-shirt for you, right? that's a beautiful thing. You know, there's a Elie Wiesel said that the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference.
Mm.
And I couldn't help but go there throughout the film when I think about, you know, what was called and still is called the Indian Act. I'm reading Bob Joseph's book I mentioned before we hit record, you know, 21 Things You May Not Know About the Indian Act. It's a book that every Canadian needs to read. I mean, it's just, it should be required reading at a grade, I don't know, 6 or 7 level, it seems to me. But the indifference of the golf balls the girls were collecting in the burial ground, in the graveyard, I just went, really? Are you kidding me? I mean, it's proximity, obviously, it makes sense practically, but it just, the metaphor of that of, wow, it's really astounding how little we cared.
Mm.
Are you hopeful? I mean, maybe this is a question for when we wrap up and we're not there yet, mm. but are you hopeful that we're getting beyond that? You know, you said some people are still looking at the bridge that's being built and so on. Are we in a better place today than we were a few years ago, or do we still have so much work to do?
We still have so much work to do. And here's why. You know, the events that you're going to see take place in the movie, yes, they're historical. They happened 31 years ago. But these types of events and this type of hatred, this type of indifference is still happening across the country. Towards Indigenous people, towards Indigenous communities. So it's a historical film that actually is still incredibly current, and it infuriates me that it's still so incredibly current. Mm. It makes me really sad, but I am hopeful. You know, in my 25 years of adult life, let's say, I have seen growth. And I am surrounded by incredible allies who are helping me, who are uplifting me, and I see the action they are taking in their own way, in their own world. And I've met so many people who want to do something,
right,
but don't know. You know, they're kind of paralyzed by not knowing. And so I'm in their life. They reach out. They say, "What can I do?" Or here, you know, the other thing is like, here's my idea. This is how I'll help. And the answer to that is, you know, we're done with, you know, your ideas on how to help. It's time to listen. We can tell you how to help and then go do. It's really more now about listening. And I feel like a lot more listening is happening. I am very hopeful that that bridge is going to continue to be constructed. I think there's a lot of people working very hard on constructing that bridge. I have to be hopeful every single day because if I'm not, the opposite of just looking at how much there is to do, it's too much. It's too heavy. So I do hang on to hope. I believe in people. And it needs to get better, but there's still so much work to do. So it's easy to point to victories, you know, and there's articles that are written, or there's a newscaster that will focus on some great thing that happened. It's got to be way bigger than an article, like than a right. blip. This has to be societal change, and we're certainly not there yet.
Yeah, and I think I think this is what's so beautiful about you telling this story narratively as opposed to a documentary. Alanis Abamsawin, I've had the pleasure of interviewing her a couple of times as a result of being connected to TIFF, and just seeing, you know, she still is reduced to tears in conversation. She, the passion, the commitment. How many movies has she made? Is it 60? I think it's getting pretty darn close to that. So obviously, this is about rolling our sleeves up in a significant way and sticking to it and not being overwhelmed. I've been working, as my listeners will know, in international development for years, Tracy. And, you know, how do you end extreme poverty? Well, that's a pretty big question. Or how do you deal with water and sanitation issues? And so, well, you step in somewhere. And I love what you said about listening. So often we don't take the time just to step back and listen to what might be next. and to step in and to read, 21 things you may not know about the Indian Act, to read people like that, to start changing the narrative. So again, congratulations on the film and thanks for telling this story in such a beautiful and a compelling way. How autobiographical really is the film for you? I mean, what was going on in your mind at 12 years old? Clearly you became a filmmaker in that 1 year. I'd love to hear a little bit more about how that played into the film.
Yeah. So her emotional through line, her coming of age journey and all the roller coaster of feelings that she goes through, that is pulled directly from my own coming of age. Some of the events that she experiences, I experienced. So some of them are recreated directly from my memory, but I was not at all of the events that you see in the film. All of the events did happen. These are all historical events that did happen. So there's no making up any of that ugliness. That all happened, but I wasn't at every single one, but I was affected by all of that. You don't have to experience a race riot to feel the repercussions of a race riot. And so emotionally, everything she goes through is exactly what my coming of age looked like.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, I think any great piece of art is got to be to some degree autobiographical, whether it's a poem or a painted piece or whatever the case might be. You know, Tracy, I watch it and I say, I find myself a little perplexed at how deep some of the hatred went during that crisis, how you were painted, First Nations people were painted as terrorists. And they don't have the rights. And what about my rights? And then of course the scene that I'm sure you've talked a great deal about and spent that tracking shot scene of the stoning of the car. I mean, I don't want to believe that. Mm. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I just go, come on, did it really get that bad? And that, I mean, that's a whole other level. It seems to me of just, oh wow, this is an inconvenience. Right. Mm-hmm. And then of course the army is called in and it's just the escalation of it all is just astounding. I don't know, crazy question. How do we get beyond that kind of hatred? I'd love to know what you think about that.
Goodness. I wish I knew the easy answer of how we can let that go. You know, one of the things that I did want to show in the film is how it's infectious. You know, it's a bit of a disease, you know, so Beans experiences it. She experiences hatred and it grows in her. That is exactly what happened to me. I was in that car with those rocks. And that was the moment that I learned to hate and it was all consuming. I didn't have a space to lash out. And so all that hatred lived inside me and it was self-destructive. So I think those are the two ways that this disease of hatred destroys our families. It destroys people. It destroys society. Is you either hold on to it and it tears you apart and you become self-destructive, or you lash out and spread it to the next person. And so you see Beans go on this journey of, you know, it's given to her. She doesn't know what to do with it. And then so she, I don't want to give too much away in case any of your listeners haven't seen the movie yet, but she then acts out in hatred and with violence. And then the question is her victim or her victim's family, then what do they do? How do they feel? And it just keeps going. So I do think, you know, first and foremost, we need to be strong enough to stop that cycle. So when it happens, we need to find our way to forgiveness. We need to find our way out of that anger and that rage and that desire for vengeance. I totally get it. I still have such a hard time watching that scene and I wrote it. I lived it. I wrote it. I shot it. I edited it. We had to, I've watched it a thousand times and it is still crystal clear in my memory. And it still guts me. It still brings me back to that helpless feeling. And it brings up the anger, you know? But what do I do with that anger? What do we do with our anger? How do we become proactive? How do we use that anger to guide us for good instead of spreading it? That I think is the number one thing we all need to get better at doing across the board.
I love it.
And we need to teach our children how to do that.
And we need to pass it on. Yeah. We need to pass it on. Anger guiding us for good is great. That's got to be the title of a book somebody's going to write soon. Let's hope so. You know, I couldn't help but think about trauma. I've done a fair bit of work in Cambodia over the years, this idea of trauma and PTSD, even though it is a sort of a Western notion, there's no question that people are suffering from trauma-related mental health issues and physiological issues and so on. You talked about hatred being a disease. When you relive that scene, were you thinking at all about that history of hatred, I guess you could say, the passing on of it, the transgenerational like nature of it. Does that make sense? I mean, this is why it's so important, it seems to me, for us to be moving towards relationship and community and reconciliation. Anyway, another huge question, Tracy. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. That's the underlying theme, I feel, of the entire movie. And you see Beans and you see her family find their way through it.
Right.
Again, don't want to give too much away.
Yes.
But I'm all about finding your way to the light through, like getting out of the dark, and finding your way to the light, even when you've been victimized. There is a path forward, and your trauma, I don't know that it'll ever leave you, but it doesn't have to define you, and it doesn't have to guide your actions. And I think my whole life has been a journey to do exactly that. And I haven't always been successful, but I'm working on it. I'm working very hard to heal and to not let that specific terrible summer pull me down. If I let it pull me down, if I let it define who I am, then hatred wins, and we can't let it win.
Have you found, and I think this is a bigger question just about trauma and these types of issues in general, but I love sort of some of the reconciliation that seems to occur with some of the friends in the film. I'm thinking of one in particular. I'm not even going to say her name because I don't want to give away too much. And again, by the way, this is a little shout out. July 23rd in theaters across Canada, going to be released on video on demand down the road as well. So look for the film Beans. The reconciliation, the commitment to that, does it come in community? Does it have to happen around others? Do you know what I mean by that, Tracy? You know, instead of retreating to our rooms and maybe to therapy, those are good things too, to live in silence and so on and to reflect. But do you think real healing comes through community, through a Q&A, for instance, you know, after TIFF? You know, do you know what I mean? You know where I'm going with that? I really am interested to know what you think.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely no expert, but I can give you my thoughts on that topic. I think it's both. I think it's equal importance. I think relationship with self is so important. I've certainly lived in a space of self-hatred, and it's hard to do anything from that state. And so if relationship with self and love of self is not solid, good luck building a relationship with anyone else and reconciling that relationship, right? So
yeah,
I think it needs to start with self, and then you can be successful as you head out to build with others.
Do you think that a ton of wisdom there, it seems to me. Do you, Tracy, do you see a, and maybe you've already thought of this and you're working on it, but do you see beans being shown in schools down the road? So this
narrative. Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, it becomes.
I hope it becomes just mandatory viewing. Right. You know, maybe it's grade 9, grade 10. I mean, there's some heavy themes in there.
Sure,
and
of course.
For the longest time, I really didn't think of the film as a film for children. You know, I really thought of it as a film for adults.
Sure.
But the more and more I've thought about it, but also young people are seeing the movie, the more I realized, you know, this is something I lived through at 12. These are themes and issues and circumstance that our children are living through. So it very much speaks to the reality. So I do hope that it is shown in schools. What grade, I am not sure, but I do hope it becomes mandatory viewing. I'd love it if, you know, all of our politicians have to see it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That is a big dream.
Yeah. When is the public political showing in Rideau Hall going to be happening? I want to be there for that event.
Me too.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love your thinking. Yeah, maybe there is, and hopefully somebody's listening who can maybe help to make this a reality. But the impact campaign that could go alongside of Beans to me. I mean, you know what? You've already created an impact campaign. I mean, the whole splash and ripple effect of telling this story of the way the conscious intentional decision of adding real footage with a narrative story. I think it's really strong. It's super, super compelling. I can't believe that we're going to have to wrap up here in a minute or two. And I always say it's one of the negatives of doing a podcast that's rooted in conversation. They kind of never end, right? There's always, especially the good ones, Tracy, there's always another question. Near the end of the film, you know, somebody in the film talks about no race, just the human race. There's this, what I call the montage of solidarity. That's sort of what I saw. And dialogue and honesty and transparency. I mean, I just, wow. For me, that is that the way forward? Is that the way to build that bridge that some people are still standing under?
That is exactly what I was going for with that archival pillar. That is
nice.
That is the road forward. If anyone is not sure, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, it's so good. Well, you know what, Tracy? Maybe the what did you call it? The pillar of solidarity? Is that what you just called it? The archival pillar. That's beautiful. Well, listen, what a pleasure talking to you today. I'm a little annoyed that this isn't a 90-minute podcast, but perhaps someday next time we can do a part two. Look forward to meeting you face to face, maybe at a film festival in the not so distant future.
Oh my God, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah, there's things are changing a little bit for TIFF this year, it looks like, and hopefully we're going to slowly get back to that. But what a thrill and pleasure to have you on the show today. We've been talking with Tracy Deer about her beautiful and compelling and important new film that we hope is going to be shown to grade 9s and 10s everywhere in the not so distant future. Tracy, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So there you have it, my interview with Tracy Deer talking about her beautiful new film, Beans. We covered a lot of ground, and as usual, I felt like we just got out of the gate after probably close to 40 minutes talking about the film, but so much more. I trust you enjoyed the interview. And if you did, please leave us a review on iTunes. Give us a thumbs up on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel there. We'd appreciate that. You can also sign up for the newsletter, davidpecklive.com. You'll see the podcasting tab, or face2facelive.ca will get you there as well. And I just can't tell you how thrilled I was to have Tracy on talking about the film, but about, like I said, about all these issues, changing the world through storytelling. And, you know, can you change the world through a conversation? I don't know. I'll let you decide that. But I sure believe in the power of relationships and building community. And I think conversations are a good place to start. And it is about empathy and it is about listening. And I hope that you enjoyed listening in here today. DavidPeckLive.com for more information about the work I'm doing, FaceToFaceLive.ca for the podcast. Hope you enjoyed today's episode and thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.